Hello, JT Wheatley here, your friendly neighborhood host of the History of Comic Books podcast, back with another edition of the History of Wonder Woman, Part 2. When we last left off, Wonder Woman was enjoying a huge success as a comic book while seeking some controversy for more controversial aspects of being a feminist and also the bondage and sexual issues. However, that didn't stop her continued success, as it soon led her getting her own newspaper strip in 1944 with King's Feature Syndicate, with Harry G. Peter, her co-creator and artist, doing the art. Marston did tame down the content for the series, of course. With his growing success, a new thing for Marston after years of failures, he started Marston Art Studio at 331 Madison Avenue at 43rd Street in the spring of 1944. He set up an exam system for hiring assistants with Olive grading them, and hired Joy L. Hummel to help write with the scripts. When she asked Olive Byrne advice on how to write the character of Wonder Woman, Byrne handed her Woman and the New Race by her aunt Margaret Sanger, stating everything she needed to know was in there. Marston enjoyed his newfound fame and success from Wonder Woman, and even had parties where he showed off his lie detector, which Olive enjoyed, but the more serious Elizabeth only pretended to. He also began to push comics as a form of scholarship, seeing the potential that few at the time as an emerging as an even greater educational and an art form, pushing it in an early 1944 article he had written for the American Scholar, the journal of his Phi Beta Kappa Society. Sadly, he wouldn't live to see it realized, as he contracted polio on August 28, 1944. He returned to work the following month, but the strip was canceled in 1945. Crippled by the disease, the family home was outfitted with ramps and hand pulleys to help him get around. Hummel took over more of the writing as well. Soon, a new professional attack came from Walter J. Ogd, a Jesuit priest who compared Wonder Woman to the Third Reich, notably their superhuman ideology. Something Superman himself faced, considering his name came from Friedrich Nietzsche, whose philosophy did influence the Nazi thinking. He published an article in the Arizona Quarterly arguing such in the spring of 1945, but by the time it came out, Wonder Woman had already weakened on her own accord. Hummel's scripts were much tamer than Marston's, while his, when he could produce them from the confines of his bed, aimed more towards family-friendly. In 1946, Battle Desires, which appeared in Comics Cavalier No. 16, about two young boys, Don and Byrne, who were having anger issues and started building pipe bombs. Wonder Woman intervenes and places Don into her introspection machine to see inside his mind, where he learns to balance his love and dominant wills. In another story, Wonder Woman teaches a young girl, Olive, to stand up to her older brothers by taking her to Paradise Island for training. They would be some of the last stories Marston ever wrote, as after a mole was removed during his body during home surgery, it was revealed to be cancerous and spread throughout most of his body. On May 2nd, 1947, he died at the age of 53. Even after death, though, Marston managed to exaggerate his life in his own obituary, which claimed his work as a light on the lie detector helped save a young black man's life, a lie about the James Fry case. After his death, Elizabeth Sadie Holloway approached Jack Liebowitz in January 1948 about taking over the writing of Wonder Woman. Ownership of the character had passed to National DC when Gaines sold his share back to them so he could start his own company, Educational Comics, which would, of course, become EC. There, Dorothy Rubinek and her husband, William Wolffolk, created Moon Girl, a new female superhero remarkably similar to Wonder Woman, from quoting Roman gods instead of Greek, and being a princess of a remote society, this time from the moon. Tragically, Gaines died in a boating accident in August 1947, and his son, Max, took over the family company. He would soon take EC in an entirely different direction. Back at National, Hummel resigned from writing Wonder Woman after marrying, and Holloway felt that she was ideal to carry on her late husband's character, but also to compete with the likes of Moon Girl. Instead of hiring her, though, Liebowitz turned to Robert Kanigher, making him both the writer and editor, while Holloway was completely cut out. She still tried to influence the writing, sending a long document called Information for Wonder Woman Scripts, which explained everything about her, from her motivations and sayings, with a chart showing which ones to avoid, and even her favorite toys. Kanigher filed the form away and then went about writing Wonder Woman as he wanted to, revamping her origin to further tie into the Greek mythological roots. Sheldon Mayer later quit as editor, and Holloway was all but forbidden at National's offices. Reportedly, when she did show up, the employees hid in their desks in fear of her. Harry G. Peter, the artist and co-creator of Wonder Woman, continued on as artist till his death in 1958. On February of 1948, Winters v. New York was ruled by the U.S. Supreme Court, which overturned a New York law banning printed material that glamorized crime. One of the critics of this ruling was Frederick Warren, who held a symposium, The Psychopathy of Comic Books, where he attacked Wonder Woman in particular for lynching of her victims, somehow that using a lasso implied that, and Loretta Binder for being in the pocket of the comic book companies. Of interesting note, when Warren worked at Bellevue Hospital from 1936 to 1940, Bender's husband, Paul Schneider, was his boss. Bender continued to defend comic books, saying they created positive role models for both boys and girls, while Warren countered they promoted lesbianism in his 1954 book, Seduction of the Innocent. As the infamous Senate hearings on the Subcommittee of Juvenile Delinquency was held on April 21st of that year, Bender was soon targeted by Senator Canaver, at Warren's urging, pointing out that she worked for a National since 1944, calling her a paid apologist for comic books. As a result of the hearings and future backlash, the CCA was formed and Jack Liebowitz reformed the Editorial Advisory Board, this time with Bender not on it. Like most comics after peacetime in the CCA, many were canceled, with JSA in 1948 and Sensation in 1953. Wonder Woman was noticeably changed as well, from no longer being able to marry her longtime love, Steve Trevor, because of her Amazonian code, to being desperate to do so. Even the Wonder Woman of History feature was ended, instead replaced by Marriage a la Mode, which was about marriage for women. As for Olive and Holloway, they would live together to their deaths, and Holloway would go back to work at Metro Life Insurance, while Olive worked at a local mental health clinic. As per Olive's wishes, her children were never told Marsden was their biological father. Margaret Sanger, Olive's aunt, helped pay for the children's education, and Don would later marry Sanger's granddaughter on March 25, 1961. As a result of this marriage, Don was motivated by his wife to finally find out the truth about his family. When they finally did, though, Don said he would never forgive them for maintaining the lie. During the 1960s, Wonder Woman saw a revival of sorts, rejoining National DC's new superhero team, Justice League of America, which debuted in Brave and the Bold, number 28, on October of 1960. With fellow teammates Flash, Green Lantern, Aquaman, and Martian Manhunter as part of a Silver Age revival of comic books. This time, she was not a secretary, but a full-fledged member of the team. Robert Kanigher had also revived her origin in Wonder Woman number 105 in April of 1958 in the story The Secret Origin of Wonder Woman, in which it was revealed she was not formed from clay, but naturally born before the Amazons came to Paradise Island. As a teenager, she went on a number of adventures, becoming Wonder Girl. Kanigher even did a Wonder Tot story with her as a toddler. While a teenager, Diana had appeared back in the original Wonder Woman number 23 in May-June of 1947. This was the first time the name of Wonder Girl was ever used. This was similar to the original concept for Superboy, who at first was just the adventures of a teenage Superman before becoming his own separate character. Later, Wonder Girl would be used for a younger sidekick version of Wonder Woman, basically her version of Robin, with Donna Troy first appearing in The Brave and the Bold number 60, June-July of 1965, who would later go on to join Teen Titans in February 1966. Troy would have a convoluted origin, ranging from being a young girl rescued and raised in Paradise Island to a magical twin of Diana, with all three merging in the current continuity. Later, Drusilla appeared in Wonder Woman in number 182 in June of 1969 as a messenger from Paradise Island, which is now in an alternate dimension after being invaded by Ares, and she was sent to get help from Diana. Then, by the end of the decade, the Diana Prince era began with Mike Siekowski, in which she was stripped of her powers and opens up a mod boutique. She also gets a new mentor, I Ching, who trains her in martial arts and weapons skills, sending her on various espionage adventures, mostly inspired by the Emma Peel character played by Diana Rigg from the Avengers British Spy series, no relation to Marvel. However, fun side note, it was this series in the later 1998 movie, The Avengers, starring Ralph Fiennes and John Steed and Uma Thurman as Emma Peel, that is the reason that the title for the comic book movie, The Avengers, in 2012 has to be called Marvel's The Avengers. However, going into the 1970s, another feminist icon would move to bring Wonder Woman back to her feminist roots. By the 1970s, Gloria Steinem was already a noted feminist and set about to found her own magazine, Miss, and she wanted to use Wonder Woman for the cover. It won't be the first time Wonder Woman found herself immersed in current politics. In the New York Magazine of 1969, where Steinem was on staff at the time, Liberated Lady by Edward Sorrell appeared, where she fought reports, and then in 1974 even infiltrated Nixon's cabinet. She was used in July of 1970 political comics, Women's Liberation Basement Press in Berkeley of California, called It Ain't Me, Babe, showing Wonder Woman protesting comics and her treatment in them. On the debut issue of Miss, in July of 1972, Wonder Woman was featured on the front cover with the headline, Wonder Woman for President. Elizabeth Holloway reportedly didn't like it, claiming it was done by a man who had no feeling for her and what he was doing. For Miss, the idea was to link the feminism in the 1940s with the 1970s, and Woman was the best way to do it. Steinem went back and read the original stories by Marsden and loved them, pointing out how strong of a character she was and how much feminism she projected in it. The magazine even produced a hardcover collection of the original projects in tribute. She hired Joanne Eggert to write the story about her decline for Miss, who was also loved the original comic books but hated the current Diana Prince era. One thing Steinem and Eggert did avoid, though, was the bondage issues, preferring to ignore it altogether. In response to this new public pressure, DC hired Rubinick Wolfolk as editor to bring Wonder Woman back to her old form. In December of 1972, a special Women's Liberation issue was produced, edited by Denny O'Neill and written by Samuel Delaney, which was meant to be a six-part story, but only one issue was ever published, as Wolfolk was fired that same year. Robert Kanigher was brought back to write the early stories in 1973, and in the deepest insult to Wolfolk, she was killed in Wonder Woman 204 on February of 1973 when a female editor is assassinated at her workplace. As with any successful comic book character, Hollywood came calling, and Wonder Woman was no exception. In 1967, William Dozier, the producer of the Adam West Batman TV series, filmed Who's Afraid of Diana Prince, but it was never produced. In March of 1974, Kathy Lee Crosby starred in the ABC TV movie, but that openly flopped. The next year, though, the new original Wonder Woman was launched, setting it in the 1940s and keeping close to Marston's original vision. It starred Linda Carter, a former beauty queen who previously represented the U.S. in the Miss World competition in 1972. The show premiered on November 7, 1975, and would have several tributes to the original comic, particularly the opening credits, which was modeled after Harry G. Peters' art, while avoiding her mythological origin. It does follow with her rescuing Steve Trevor, played by Lyle Waggoner, on the Paradise Island and returning with him to help the Allies fight the Nazis during World War II, where she takes up the guise of Diana Prince, Navy Yeoman Petty Officer First Class. There she would also befriend Etta Candy, performed by Beatrice Conan, who was played for comic relief. Of course, she brought her patented bracelets to deflect bullets and a lasso of truth, and a flashback showed how her mother, Hippola, taught her to use her magic to instantly change her costume, creating the famous Wonder Woman twirl that would later be incorporated into her permanent continuity in comics and other medium. The first season even debuted Wonder Girl to live action, played by Deborah Winger for 3 episodes. For the show, she was reimagined as Diana's younger sister, Drusilla. While the show was successful, ABC was concerned about the production costs, especially since the fact that it was a period piece taking place in the 1940s. CBS agreed to pick it up on the condition that setting was moved to modern day. The show's solutions for this in the second season was to have Diana return to Paradise Island, where she would stay for 35 years, and since she ages slowly, being practically immortal, is able to appear the same age when she returns, this time working for the Interagency Defense Command, a CIA-like agency. Lyle Waggoner returned as well, this time playing Steve Trevor Jr., who would only be good friends with Diana, as the producers thought it weird that she would be romantically involved with both father and son. Guess there is a bit of a double standard, since Captain America would famously romance Peggy Carter in the 1940s and then her niece Sharon in present day. The show also introduced multiple outfits for Wonder Woman, from a diving suit to the motorcycle outfit, along with incorporating the invisible jet. By the third season, Diana was shown being able to talk to animals, and in the last 3 episodes, was transferred to the AIDC Los Angeles office in the attempt to revamp the show for a fourth season, but was ultimately canceled after airing on August-September of 1979. The show would later receive a comic book tribute written by Mark Andreyko in 2014 called Wonder Woman 77, which was published digitally on the DC website, and even had her team up with a fellow TV 70s icon, the Bionic Woman, in one issue. As for Linda Carter, she would go on to have a solid acting career afterwards, taking time off to raise her family, and most notably has appeared as the president in Supergirl TV series on the CW network. Wonder Woman also appeared in the Super Friends show, which aired on and off between 1973 and 1986 for a total of 109 episodes. This and the Linda Carter show did help bring about a revival of the character in the comic books, with DC president Jeanette Kahn ordering a revamping in 1977. of her look, artist Milton Glaser replaced the eagle in her costume with the WWE symbol that she is known for today, and she would soon be incorporated into the title's logo by letterer Todd Klein. Despite this, sales started to continue to decline, with the current run of the series ending in issue of number 329 by Jerry Conway on February of 1986, with Diana marrying Steve Trevor. However, the Crisis of Infinite Earths revamped the entire DC line, and this story was considered to take place in Earth 2. Of course, critics were soon circling this feminist revival of Wonder Woman with a red stocking, a radical women's liberation group founded in 1969, producing a story in May of 1975 that Gloria Steinem was a CIA agent and Wonder Woman was ruining feminism. In 1978, political cartoonist David Levin drew a character of a Margaret Sanger as Wonder Woman, ironically not realizing she was the chief inspiration for her. Finally, the story of the Marsden family was starting to leak to the public. Olive Byrne died in 1990 at the age of 86, having lived with Holloway in Tampa for 64 years near her son, Byrne. Holloway would later die 3 years later in 1993 at Pete's house. Back in the comics, the Crisis of Infinite Earths storyline of 1986 brought about a revamp of the entire DC lineup, and Lynn Wein, George Perez, and Greg Potter were tasked with the reimagining Wonder Woman, who is now an ambassador from Themyscira Paradise Island, incorporating the Greek mythology more into her story. This ended up being a critical and commercial success and a chief inspiration for Patty Jenkins' ultimate film in 2017. On November 17, 2001, Wonder Woman rejoined the animated world when the Justice League cartoon debuted on Cartoon Network. Set in the same animated universe as the Batman animated series and Superman animated series in the 1990s, it made a big change to her origin in the series in that she had only just left Themyscira as an ambassador and is a new at being a superhero. In the show, she's often referred to as a rookie. Voiced by Susan Eisenberg, one of the subplots of the show is how she tries to adjust to living in the new world. The show would continue to May 29, 2004, where it morphed into Justice League Unlimited, which featured an even larger roster of DC characters, and that continued on to May 31st, 2006. Back in the comics, one of the most controversial moments in Wonder Woman's career was when she killed the villainous Maxwell Lord in Wonder Woman number 219 in 2005 as part of the larger The Omok Project miniseries. A strange series in which a miniseries, which was usually contained self-contained stories, crossed over with Superman and Wonder Woman, where in which the story had Superman being mind-controlled by Maxwell Lord in order to kill Batman. Wonder Woman tried to break his mental control, but Maxwell Lord said the only way to do it was to break his neck, and she called his bluff. The decision would ultimately cause the Justice League to break up at the beginning of Infinite Crisis event in 2006. Many fans criticized the decision of having Wonder Woman killing, pointing out that she had a no-killing rule laid down by Marston when he created her. However, writer Greg Rucka pointed out that being a part of a warrior culture like the Amazons, killing would be something Wonder Woman would understand. Rucka, who had begun a successful run of the series in the 2000s, had also made the death penalty part of the Amazonian culture earlier, setting this up as a more violent Wonder Woman. He also, of note, pointed out that the Amazons were quite open to lesbian relationships, considering it is an island only of women. So, while Superman and Batman started out killing criminals in their first comics before receiving a no-killing edict from the company, from National/DC, that has since been woven into their character, Wonder Woman has gone the opposite direction and has now been established as the one of the big three DC superheroes who is willing to take a life. As she would later state when someone asked why she doesn't have as many villains as Superman and Batman, Wonder Woman replied, "Because when I take care of my villains, I take care of them." In 2009, as part of the DC Warner Brothers' larger lineup of direct-to-DVD animated movies, Wonder Woman made her entry, directed by Lauren Montgomery and produced by Bruce Timm, with Kerry Russell voicing Diana, Nathan Fillion voicing Steve Trevor, and Alfred Molina voicing Ares. The story sticks closer to the original comic book, but added a wrinkle of Wonder Woman being a defiant against her mother. During the contest to decide which Amazon will escort Trevor back to America, she has to compete in disguise because Hippolyte originally forbid it. Released on March 3rd of 2009, the film received mostly positive reviews, with the main criticism being over the level of violence. Both Steve Trevor and Wonder Woman are seen killing adversaries. It will receive much better praise than the failed 2011 Wonder Woman pilot, starring Adrienne Palicki in the title role and produced by David E. Kelley for NBC. The show was roundly criticized by fans, especially when leaked pictures of the costume consisting of rubbery blue pants were leaked online. Ultimately, it was never picked up. In 2012, the CW announced plans to produce the show Amazon, giving a new origin to Wonder Woman in the same vein as Smallville, the TV show for Superman. However, other shows like The Flash were pushed forward, and by 2017, in the sense of the theatrical film, the series has officially been put on hold. By 2011, the biggest revamp of Wonder Woman's mythos came when Brian Azzarello and Cliff Chiang was given the series during the New 52 revamp. DC sure likes those continuity reboots. The biggest change was Diana's very beginning, as it was revealed that her being formed by clay from her mother, Hippola, and given life by the gods was a lie, and in fact she was the daughter of Zeus and Hippola. This further incorporated Diana into the Greek mythos, as she was now a demigod and one of Zeus's many illegitimate children, thus explaining her powers. It also revealed her bracelets, now the bracelets of submission, were meant to contain her powers, which when taken off unleashed her in near immeasurable strength. By the end of this acclaimed and a successful run, Wonder Woman would fight numerous other Greek gods, now her family, protect her infant younger brother, and end up becoming the goddess of war. It also inadvertently made the new Wonder Girl, Casey Sandmark, her younger sister, like in the TV show. Introduced back in Wonder Woman number 105 in January of 1996, she is the daughter of Zeus and archaeologist Helen Sandmark. However, with the New 52 reboot, this was changed with Wonder Girl being Diana's niece, as she was now Zeus's granddaughter through his son, Lennox Sandmark, a British super soldier. With the success of the Superman and Batman film franchise, Warner Brothers was looking to cash in on Wonder Woman as the final member of the superhero DC Trinity. It began in 1996 with Ivan Reitman of the Ghostbusters fame attached to produce and possibly direct. Then in 1999, John Cohen was attached with Joel Silver producing, with the rumors of Sandra Bullock being sought for the role. In 2001, Todd Alcott was hired by Silver for the screenplay, and while other performers from Mariah Carey to Catherine Zeta-Jones were considered for the role, Bullock was still kept being the focus. The screenplay kept going through multiple screenwriters, and then in 2005, Joss Whedon was hired to write and direct the film, with a salary of $2 to $3 million. Having produced the popular Buffy the Vampire Slayer series for the WB, which also featured a strong female lead, along with his highly acclaimed directorial debut in Serenity, many fans thought Whedon would be an ideal choice. However, after turning in an unsatisfactory screenplay, Whedon left the project in 2007. With Whedon would go on to direct the mega-hit The Avengers in 2012, many noted that DC lost its director to Marvel. However, when the script leaked, many understood that Steve Trevor was the main character over Wonder Woman, who had been frequently rescued by him. After the negative reaction of his treatment of the Black Widow in Avengers Age of Ultron, a trend started to be noticed, especially when he was brought on to do reshoots for the 2017 Justice League film. The film kept getting bounced around, with different versions having it set in modern day, World War II, and even not focusing on Diana at all, but just the history of Paradise Island. At one point, director Paul Feig pitched the idea to Warner Brothers as an action comedy, but that was passed on. Finally, the studio decided to narrow the focus to a female director, with Michelle MacLaren their first pick, but eventually passed due to creative differences. Finally, Patty Jenkins signed on in 2015, based on a script by Alan Heinberg. As for Wonder Woman, the studio finally cast Gal Gadot in 2013, an Israeli actress most known for her roles in the Fast and Furious movies, and also of note, the former Israeli beauty queen, similar to the previous actress who played Wonder Woman, Linda Carter. Originally brought in on a blind audition, in which actors were asked to do a reading but not aware what part it's for, Gadot flew back home to Israel and was seriously considering quitting Hollywood, as she had recently given birth to her first daughter and wanted to spend more time at home with her family. When Zack Snyder, the director of Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice, called for a second reading, Gadot stated she didn't feel like coming unless she knew what the part was. Snyder, according to Gadot, reportedly said, "Well, we have this character called Wonder Woman. I don't know if she's popular in Israel, but we think you'd be great for it," at which point Gadot cut him off and said she would be there immediately. After being cast, Gadot did receive some criticism from some fans for being too skinny, but having served in the Israeli Defense Forces as a fitness instructor, she quickly got in shape for the role. And when Batman v Superman was released in 2016, she was one of the good things many fans and critics noticed about it. Patty Jenkins was initially upset at first at not being able to cast her lead actress, but once viewing her in Batman v Superman and meeting her, Jenkins found Gadot an ideal, claiming she inhabited the role as much as Linda Carter did or as Christopher Reeve did Superman. It should be noted that Jenkins personally loved Superman the movie and used it as a chief reference for Wonder Woman. Along with she also especially loved the original run by Marston and the 1980s run by George Perez. They also factored her in the new origin from New 52, with her being the daughter of Zeus and Hippola. Chris Pine was cast as Steve Trevor, while Lucy Davis was brought as Eddie Candy, the first time this character would be brought to a major film. Dr. Poison was made her debut as well as Elena Anaya. A change to her origin was that it took place in World War I instead of World War II. Filming went smoothly in 2016, with the only slight hiccup being during reshoots when a green cloth had to be used to cover up Gadot's belly, as she was 5 months pregnant with her second child at the time. Finally, on June 2nd, 2017, the film opened to rave reviews and a $103 million opening, the biggest for a female-directed movie, eventually grossing $822 million worldwide. For many, it's considered to be the only good DCEU film to date, with Gadot and Jenkins having both been signed on for future films. Gadot was originally just signed on for a future Justice League films, but after the film's success, Warner Brothers quickly locked her down. One strange criticism, though, came from director James Cameron of Terminator and Avatar, who stated that while he liked the movie, he felt that Wonder Woman was a step backward for female leads because she was so beautiful. Patty Jenkins responded, pointing out that was the point of the character, since Marsden wanted to create the ideal woman, both beautiful and powerful. It should be noted that Cameron has never criticized when attractive actors are cast, like Henry Cavill for Superman or Ben Affleck for Batman. So according to Cameron, it's okay for male superheroes to be handsome and powerful, but not female ones. Granted, James Cameron has a history of hypocritical criticism. He recently stated he hoped the Avengers movies would wear down, as there are other stories to tell, despite producing Battle Angel Alita, an adaptation of the popular manga comic book. As for the sequel, Kristen Wiig has recently been signed to portray the villain Cheetah, while Pedro Pascal has signed up for an unspecified role. The sequel is set to be released on November 1st of 2019. Unfortunately, as soon as DCEU finally had a great film, it stumbled again with Justice League later that year, particularly with its treatment of Wonder Woman. Remember Joss Whedon, whose own screenplay was so bad originally? Well, he was hired by Warner Brothers to handle reshoots after Zack Snyder had to leave the film due to a personal tragedy. When the film was released on November 17, 2017, it was widely panned by critics, notably for its treatment of Wonder Woman, with the male members of the team making sexually suggestive comments, like when Aquaman accidentally sits on her lasso, to the Flash awkwardly falling on her in a suggestive way. This was seen as a giant step backward. Most notably, it was revealed that these results were of Whedon's reshoots, not of Snyder's original cut. With the film's failure at the box office, Joss Whedon was let go by Warner Brothers, who had hired him to develop a Batgirl movie. But after this, the fans in the studio had had enough. That wasn't the only controversial Wonder Woman film to come out in cinema that year, though, as The Professor Marsden and The Wonder Woman premiered on October 13, 2017, which detailed the professional and personal life of Marsden and his family leading up to the creation of Wonder Woman. Luke Evans was cast, strangely enough, because he's nowhere near a D.O.B.'s Marsden, as William Moulton Marsden, with Rebecca Hall as Elizabeth Holloway Marsden, and Billy Heathcote as Olive Byrne. It also featured Olive Pratt playing Max Gaines, while Connie Britton played Josette Frank. While the movie received positive marks as a film, it was lambasted for historical inaccuracies, particularly that Luke Evans casting, and most importantly, the Marsden family criticized it as a work of fiction, noting that the incident where Holloway wanted Byrne and her children to leave the house never happened, and that they did not practice domination. As a result, the film made only $1.9 million at the box office. And that brings us up to date more or less with Wonder Woman, the premier female superhero in comics and all other mediums. Like the rest of DC Trinity, Superman, and Batman, she's had lived a life well past the lives of her creators and will no doubt continue to live on for centuries after. I should note that my chief source for this episode was The Secret History of Wonder Woman by Joe Lepore, a fantastic history of the early creation of Wonder Woman, and particularly under the details of the Marsden family. Pick it up wherever books are sold. Quite worth the read.
Super Kick Party. It's the wrestling podcast from the host who is the hammer swinging, burrito eating, well, you know the rest of Thunder Talk. Sexy. Thor. It's the Ring of Thunder found in the Thunderverse and among the great podcasts of the ESO Network.
And now it is April 4th, 2024, time for the favorite comic of the week. The Sensational She-Hulk, number 7, by Rainbow Rowell and I.G. Guerrera, which is a great issue that continues She-Hulk and her boyfriend Jack of Hearts going on an intergalactic vacation retreat, only for Jack to run into an old love that he apparently promised that once she finished her mission, they would get back together.
And this, of course, throws some turmoil in the She-Hulk's own relationship, as she kind of sees that this this old love of Jack's, Ganymede, they do have a real connection, and she doesn't know what to do. But then some other complications show up, which shows that we may see some hope in this relationship after all. Rao is continuing to write what's probably the best romance book on the stands right now. It's really great. The romance between She-Hulk and Jack Howard is great and heartfelt, especially the fact that they have a hard time touching because he absorbs radiation, and that could drain their gamma radiation that powers She-Hulk. And they're finally on a retreat where they can get together. But then he runs into his old love. And the thing is, though, Ganymede, at first, she comes off as a genuine person that Jack actually has feelings for, and you could tell that She-Hulk is like, hey, you need to explore this before we can move forward. It's, real great romantic tension here. It's just great in general. It's matched by Guerrero's art, which is gorgeous. She-Hulk never looks... But he managed to grab on making She-Hulk look powerful yet gorgeous at the same time, which is how she always is depicted, like... Really harkening back to the highlight of the classic John Byrne run, where he always drew her, where she had the body, she had the look of like a female bodybuilder, where she was gorgeous, yet you could tell she could bend you like a pretzel, which she has some, for some fanboys, might be an ideal form too. Yeah, just a great read in general, heartfelt, enjoyable, and of course we're going to get some action next issue, so yeah, if you're looking for one of the best romance books on the stands, yeah, we need some more romance and variety in comic books and superhero books in general. Check out the Sensational She-Hulk number 7, just a fantastic read. And with that, we'll conclude this archive edition of the History of Wonder Woman. Join me again next week, where I'll probably be going back to archiving some of the older history series, unless another theme pops up. But until then, enjoy yourself a good comic book, and if you can, definitely check out the Sensational She-Hulk, and just in general. It's the best romance book on the stands.